involving Owen vector, Owen scalar, and Owen traceless symmetric tensor. I will also talk about a cutting surface algorithm. Then in the afternoon, we were going to learn how to use AutoBoot to automatically generate a bootstrap equation for many symmetries. And I will also show you a code based on the method in this lecture to derive O-N bootstrap equation. And we will use a cutting surface algorithm to make some bootstrap computation. And in Aiko's tutorial, she will show you how to use Hyperion to bootstrap 3D using CFT. Okay, so let me start by I have to introduce some group theory object. So assuming we have a group with a real representation and STR labels a representation. And assuming we have tensor product decomposition, S tensor product T have this decomposition, N labels the multiplicity, R1 to R3. Those are labels the rep. So assuming so the Gordon coefficient for this decomposition from R tensor S to T, assuming that is given by this structure. So T is the rep, C is the index for the rep. Same for R and S are the rep. A and B are index for the rep. And I here are the multiplicity. So this Kalbsch Gordon coefficient, we can use it to explicitly construct the field for the decomposition. For example, if we have a field phi in the representation R with index A, now the field phi in representation S in with index B. So this S is not a singulate. S and R are generic rep. And we contract these two fields with the Kalbsch-Gordon coefficient. And that gives us a field in the rep T with index C. Okay, so the normalization for Kalbsch-Gordon coefficient is given by this. You contract index AB, and the result should be delta. So I'm going to introduce another symbol called the Fourier symbol. That's defined to be the Kalbsch-Gordon coefficient, but divided by dimension of rep T. And then this normalization, so the normalization will become this one. And usually, 3G symbol have better symmetric property or anti-symmetric property when you permute ABC. So the reason we want this structure is we want to use this structure to define our three-point function for CFT. So we define three-point function of three fields that have global symmetry. We define the three-point function to be this structure multiplied the standard conformal structure. Okay, so here I give you an example for O-N group with capital S is the singulate, V is the vector rep. then Sayce coefficient can be written in this way. So for vector to scalar, that's delta ij, and you have to put this coefficient here in order to match the normalization. So this box means singlet don't have index. Now, three symbol is this one. So you can check this three symbol is actually symmetric.
Sorry, Nick.
Yes.
Can you go back? Is the 3J symbol VVS or VVV?
Oh, VVS. Sorry, I have a typo. Let me fix it. Oh, by the way, the slides is in the GitLab repository. So next, let me introduce some notation. Assuming ijk are the ON vector indices, and we want to use vector indices to label arbitrary wrap in ON. So specifically, what I mean is that imagine you have a twist symmetric tensor that can be labeled by ij, and with ij to be the vector index. Now, I want to introduce the generalized delta symbol. That's defined for a specific wrap R, and the definition is that when this delta contracts with a field in wrap R, that gives this field back. And this ij here are a set of vector indices. So for example, for traceless symmetric tensor, this will be ij. And here I have summation over j indices. So this symbol satisfy the usual condition, and trace give you the dimension for R. Yes?
So again, like on the right hand side, phi of I, is it phi of I or phi of j?
Oh, I. Sorry. Thanks. Thanks. So this symbol essentially construct an operator in R using a few vectors. One example is the traceless symmetric range 2 tensor. So this delta, now those indices are ij, kl is the this index. So for traceless symmetric tensor, it's this one. This term subtract the trace. Okay, if you use this generalized delta symbol, then for any wrap R with singlet, the Clebsch-Gordan coefficient is given by one over dimension of R multiplies the delta symbol. And this one is the 3J symbol.
So,
yes.
The idea is that this generalized delta function can just take some tensor product and spit out the correct vector, or does it have to? Because in the example that you wrote on the left hand side,
this
second to last line.
This?
Yeah, in the left-hand side, you didn't put the actual symmetrized version.
Yeah, so even I didn't put the actual symmetrized version, it still gave me a result in this wrap. So that's a realization of project tensor product of vector to a specific wrap. But if I actually put this on this side, then you can check this hold. So now we can use collapse Jordan coefficient or 3G symbol to define three-point function. So here I have space-time a spin zero operator, but have global symmetry R, and the index is A. So this notation means wrap R with index A. And the last second field is also spin zero. Last field is spin L. I can either define the three-point function use the collapse Jordan coefficient, multiply the OPE coefficient, and multiply the conformal structure. Or I can define a three-point function to be defined against the 3G symbol. So in this tutorial, I'm going to use alpha, because alpha usually have a better symmetric property. Usually when you permute IJK, it's symmetric or anti-symmetric. If I use this definition, I can define two-point function to be three-point function, but the last field is the identity. Then use this definition, that's alpha phi phi I divided by dimension of square root of dimension of phi. And here AB are the wrap. So this means the wrap has to be the same. And this one is a generalized delta. So whenever I write a wrap in the bracket, that means a generalized delta. If I have nothing here, that means the ordinary delta. So this is the conformal part. At this stage, I don't want to fix the alpha phi phi I. The reason is that the choice of alpha phi phi I leads to different convention. And in the literature, people use many different conventions. So if we don't fix this for now, and later we choose a specific alpha phi phi I to match different paper, that's easier for us to trace different convention.
Sorry, Ning, question. Is the dimension phi k means dimension of the representation or dimension of the?
Oh, this means the dimension of the representation.
Okay.
Thanks. Let me fix it. Okay. Now, for the the OPE of phi 1, phi 2 now can be written in this way. So it's summation over all possible wrap, and summation over all the operator in the wrap R, and summation for multiplicity. Inside, we have this factor, OPE coefficient, 3G symbol, and this C is the standard conformal structure fixed by matching three-point function with two-point function. You can show the definition of alpha here are compatible with the definition in the three-point function. Now, I can use the collapse Jordan coefficient to define four-point structure. So four-point structure has three wrap, four wrap are the wrap for essentially the four-point structure is the global symmetry structure appear in the four-point function. In the conformal partial wave decomposition. So we have four wrap here. That's the wrap corresponding to the external operator. R are the wrap. A is the index for that wrap. And also there is a wrap S corresponding to the wrap of the intermediate operator. So this structure is a summation of two collapse Jordan coefficient, but we sum up the internal index AB, internal index B. So this one and this one, we sum over B, and dimension of S, dimension of the internal wrap, and 1 over alpha SS1.
So S is the singlet?
S is not singlet.
Oh, it's just
A small s is an arbitrary wrap. Capital S is the singlet. So you can take alpha SS1 to be some function depends on dimension of S. Specifically, if you take alpha SS1 to be 1 over dimension of S, therefore, this part is 1. So if this piece is 1, we call this P the four-point projector because it satisfies some nice property. One property is that if I take the external wrap to be R1, R2, R1, R2, and I sum over all possible internal wrap, that give you a generalized delta. So that's the completeness for a projector.
So that four-point structure seems like you first fuse 1 and 2 and then fuse 3 and 4, right?
Those are external index. This are internal index. What happens in the conformal partial wave decomposition, you have operator carry internal index, and when that internal operator will form a two-point function, therefore this index will sum over the index of the internal operator.
So R1, R2, and to R4, they are external
yes.
operator insertions, right?
Yeah.
And could you explain again what's the... Oh, okay.
Okay. So now this P is a projector. It satisfies the projector property. We can take R1, R2, R3, R4, R3, R4, R5, R6. And sum up the index for these two wrap. The result is that we get a projector for R1, R2, R5, R6, delta RS demand, they have to be same wrap. So that's the projection.
Sorry, for the first line, completeness, I would have naively expected also a delta with A1, A4, for example, maybe? But
you expect A1, A4.
Ah, sorry, no, R1, okay, no. The everything is fine, sorry.
Yeah, exercise is you should try to prove those property using the property of using the property of collapse Jordan coefficient. Also, orthogonality, if you trace over all the index, that just give you delta RS and the dimension of the wrap.
So they're just from the completeness and orthogonality of the representation of O(n), right?
So those property comes from here. Just use this one, you can derive everything. Okay, now we can define conformal partial wave decomposition. So for this four-point function, I'm assuming phi 1 is in wrap R1, phi 2 is in R2, and phi 3, phi 4 are in those. The decomposition is we have OP coefficient and two 3G symbol and this convention factor conformal block. So now conformal block is this structure acting on two-point function. In this definition, the block is in row one of this table. So this table have all different conventions for conformal block. So we have two conventions. One is a convention for conformal block. In my tutorial, the convention for conformal block is always in this convention. But we have a separate convention, which is a convention for global symmetry. So the actual OP coefficient depends on these two conventions. Here, I fix the convention for conformal block, but I leave the convention for the global symmetry unfixed. So I'm going to fix that convention by demanding alpha 0, 0, 0, 0001.
So what are the indices n and m?
Thanks. I have another typo. Sorry. So this carry multiplicity. So n and m are the index for the multiplicity. So for those property, I assume there is no multiplicity. If there is a multiplicity, it has to be handled more carefully.
Why did you make the conventions? The convention, like the first one, is there a reason or just?
You mean this one? Because personally, I like this convention because in this convention, this structure, the cis structure is the structure so this part is the standard three-point function. This is the standard two-point function. So this cis structure, in this way, I explicitly, it's just a personal choice.
Yeah, okay.
Now we can derive bootstrap equation. I define the crossing kernel M to be the projector with wrap R1, R2, R3, R2, R1, R4, decomposed to R1, R2, R3, R4, and the kernel is MRS. So this satisfies the completeness. So when we exchange R1 with R3, it should admit a linear decomposition in those projects. So those are the four-point structure in the directed channel, and those are the projects in the exchanged channel. So project in exchange channel should admit a linear decomposition.
Because the projector is a complete set from the MR tensor.
Yes, the projector satisfy completeness. It's a complete set. Any questions?
Is this doing crossing only for the global part or everything? The global symmetry.
So this is purely group theoretical definition, and I'm going to use it for the deriving the full bootstrap equation now. So again, I define the convolved block in this way. Then the bootstrap equation is given by this one. It's very similar to the bootstrap equation I showed you yesterday for easy model, except now we have this crossing kernel here. So that is a special case. If you take phi 1 equals to phi 3, then this term match this term, and the OP coefficient match. Therefore, you can combine these two terms to get this equation.
Yeah, I think there may be a typo in this crossing matrix.
You mean here?
Side, like, it should be PR, PS.
Oh. Sorry.
No, no. Right hand side. Not left hand side. Yes.
Yeah, look, you're summing over that.
Yes.
I think it should be this. Thanks.
No. Okay. Yeah.
No, I think this is correct.
So sorry, with that you're changing the internal representation, the global internal representation that you're exchanging.
What do you mean internal? This is those index are internal representation.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're using that to change in the equation the internal of the first step.
Basically, those are the conformal partial wave decomposition with internal rep S in direct channel. And this is in the exchange channel.
Sorry, naive question. What do you mean by internal rep?
Okay, so what I mean is that we use OP to fuse phi 1, phi 2. Then phi 1, phi 2 carry rep R1, R2, right? So after I fuse it, here I should have a 3G symbol. And then whatever inside should be so we have R1 times tensor R2 equals to a bunch of rep. Then for the intermediate operator, it will carry all the rep here. So then for the specific rep inside, this whole diagram will be this whole diagram will be projected with SI and multiply the standard conformal part.
Yes. So sorry, like in F, in the definition of conformal block, you should think like that there is another index which is R, which is the representation of O, right?
This is a purely conformal part. I separate the conformal part with the global part. So the global part is this piece. It's just a...
Okay, yeah, I see, thanks.
Okay, so you really should try to derive this equation to understand it. Now I'm ready to fix the convention for global symmetry. So I have different choice. I can choose alpha SS1 to always be 1. This is my preference, because if you choose this, then the OP coefficient for identity is 1. That's nice. So this is the default choice in simple boot. And the four-point structure is given by this. Or you can choose this to be this term. Then this structure is a projector. And it satisfies the projector properties. Or you can choose this to be square root of dimension of S. This is a choice in auto boot. So in auto boot, the OP coefficient is not, the OP coefficient for identity is not 1. You have to keep that in mind. If you choose different convention, the OP coefficient will be different, and they are related in this way. So sim denotes simple boot. This is auto boot, and this is a projector convention. In the literature,
different paper have different conventions, so you have to think carefully and match conventions. Any questions so far?
Will this convention affect the two-point function of stress tensor?
No. Two-point function of stress tensor.
Yeah.
So here, my choice of convention for the conformal part is fixed. I always choose for conformal part, I always choose the three-point function to be this one, two-point function to be this one. The conformal part is fixed. This alpha 5ii just try to fix the convention for global part.
Your two-point function for internal, external, do they have the same convention? The global part.
The global part. They have say okay. So the good thing is in this way I define the OP coefficient against the Schrödinger symbol, because Schrödinger symbol is symmetric, therefore when the operator appear internal or external, it's the same convention.
So sometimes you can do different conventions with internal and external.
So for example, if you choose your OP coefficient to be this lambda,
uh-huh,
against defined against the Clebsch-Jordan coefficient, then it appears internal or external are different.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have a bar here to separate them.
Different conventions.
Mm. By the way, those notations are from Autoboot paper. So you can, if you forgot something, you can look at Autoboot paper. So next, I'm going to discuss in principle how we can compute the coarsening kernel. The method I'm going to tell you, roughly the method in Autoboot and another method called bird track. Recently, there is a paper by David Samstoffing and Simon and Yue Zhou here and Julio.
Harold Martinez.
Okay.
Another author.
Yeah, thanks. So in that paper, they use wave shifting operator to essentially derive the same thing. So for ON, there isn't a more elegant way to do it. But in this lecture, I'm going to show you a brute force way. In principle, this method could work for many different symmetries. So this Schrödinger symbol is an invariant tensor. What does that mean? That means the Schrödinger symbol, we use symbol is an explicit realization of tensor product decomposition. If we have a field phi in rep R, another field phi in rep S, and we contract the RS index with Schrödinger symbol, we get a decomposition in the rep T. Now, imagine those are ON field. I can use the rotation matrix to transform the field. So I transform this to this field, transform this to this one. Then to get the decomposition in the transformed coordinate, I can either do decomposition here, or I can transform this field to here. But of course, they should commute. That means this Schrödinger symbol has to be an invariant tensor. The definition is you transform index in the invariant tensor, you should get that tensor back. So the simplest example is if you have vector vector, and you contract the index to get a singulate. This delta ij is a invariant tensor for on. So, or in case of Lie group, you can take an infinite testimal version of the group element. Then you get the generator acting on the 3D symbol equals to zero. So this is actually many equation. So this holds for all the generator in R, but also another equation for S and another equation for T. So if I understand correctly, what happens in output is that you can treat this structure as explicit dimension R, dimension S, dimension T, rank 3 tensor, and treat all the entry as unknown variable and try to explicitly solve this equation. So I think that's what happened inside the output. So this works very well for small number of generators and for small representation dimension. Is this clear to you? Okay, good. But of course, if the number of generators is higher, and or if the dimension of the rep become higher, then solving this could be difficult. Also, in this method, you have to fix the group. For example, you have to fix the n in O n. Okay. Now, that's another way, which is essentially also a brute force way to do it. We can try to explicitly construct a 3D symbol from scratch. So this is the bird check method. Let's take ON as an example. So first step, we try to write down the generalized delta for the rep that we are interested. So, sorry, I think I have not a typo. This should be the singulate. This is generalized delta for the singulate, generalized delta for the traceless symmetric tensor.
No, that's for me. S is not.
Yeah. Hmm? Oh, yeah. Sorry. I confused myself.
Yeah, S is just one.
Yeah. This is generalized delta for V because ij, ij are the index for vectors. Okay, so in general, how you constructed those symbol for arbitrary rep, ON representation are labeled by the Young tableau. That means you want to symmetrize and symmetrize some index. Therefore, in principle, you can just write down a bunch of ordinary delta and let Young symmetrizer acting on it. So. And then you have to subtract the trace. So for example, for the traceless symmetric tensor, first step, you write down delta and symmetrize the index. So this part is easy. But now we have to minus the trace. So it can carry some arbitrary coefficient, but then the coefficient is fixed by demand. This is traceless. So that's how you get this generalized delta. So if you want to do this for generic traceless symmetric rank L tensor, the answer is this one. So it's actually a quite difficult computation. So next exercise for you, try to prove this is correct.
Any questions so far? Once we have the generalized delta, we can try to construct a 3J symbol. Let me give you an example. Let's consider vector-vector traceless symmetric tensor. So remember, our purpose is trying to construct the invariant tensor. And we have three generalized delta. Those are sorry, this should be L. Those are the index for the 3J symbol. And internally, we have those index. So if we can contract the internal index, then this diagram will be an invariant tensor. So in this specific case, we really only have one way to contract the index. We have to contract this one with this one. We cannot contract these two, because if we do that, then you have to contract these two. But because it's traceless, then the whole diagram will be zero. So when I contract, I mean I put a delta to connect the index. And another choice is you contract this index with this one with this one. But because T is traceless symmetric, so that choice is same as this one. So now, 3J symbol for VVT, again given by this expression, and the overall factor is fixed by the normalization. Let's think about a slightly more complicated case, TTT. So we have generalized delta for T, another one for, so we have three generalized delta for T. And we want to contract all the internal index. That is only one way to do it, which is this diagram. So when you exchange these two index, that's the same diagram. When you start to actually compute those diagrams, you will need some coding in Mathematica, and the result is this. So another exercise I want you to do. Let's try to understand the current in Bootstrap more carefully. So there are two ways to define current. One way is we define current through the WAD identity. That means you put a current in a three-point function and integrate. This integration is the integration for x in a surface around x1. Then this will transform the ON index for this operator. That's the WAD identity. So epsilon IM is the anti-symmetric tensor have plus one at IM minus one at MI. So that is another way to define current. Okay. So if you if we define current through WAD identity, then the normalization of the current, the normalization of two-point function of current, now is given by an arbitrary coefficient here. That's the current central charge. This part is the generalized delta for the adjoint wrap. But this is not what we do in Bootstrap. In Bootstrap, we define two-point function to be this convention factor, generalized delta, and the standard conformal part. So this is what we do in Bootstrap. But this is what we define current in through WAD identity. Therefore, this J is not this J. So the red J is the J in WAD identity.
this J is a J in conformal bootstrap. So they should there should be a factor between them. So try to work out that factor. And once you work out that factor, you can find the relation between alpha phi phi j, alpha tdj, and the current cj. So this is how we extract current central charge from OP coefficient. Any questions?
Sorry, so how to fix the normalization of the current? I cannot. So it seems that the current can have like an arbitrary rescaling, right?
Any operator can have arbitrary rescaling.
So how should I fix that scale?
So that can be fixed in conformal bootstrap for any operator. We fix the rescaling by demand the three-point function to be a standard conformal part and some standard structure. So this is how we fix the scaling rescale or field redefinition in CFT. But there are some special operator which is current and the energy momentum tensor. So those operator, when they appear in n point function, they satisfy Ward identity. Therefore, it's convenient for us to define a different way to fix the convention, which is that the convention is fixed through Ward identity. So once you demand this, you can you couldn't rescale J anymore because this side there is no J. So now the field redefinition of J are fixed by this one. But once you fix the field redefinition in Ward identity, now two-point function cannot be this. Instead, in two-point function, the coefficient will be a physical quantity.
So is the normalization of the current related to the normalization of the stress tensor? Or they are different?
They're different. Here I'm talking about the current. But there is a similar computation like this for the energy momentum tensor. In fact, you have to work out that computation to figure out how central charge related to lambda alpha phi phi t. So that is an analogy of this computation for energy momentum tensor. Okay, so for ON bootstrap, we have those correlator, and what do we need? We need those representation decomposition. Here, those Y denote the Young tableau. So my notation here for Y31, that's this box.
Sorry, Ning, S is the singlet in the correlator?
I'm sorry. So here, S is the singlet.
Okay.
Phi is the vector. T is the traceless symmetric tensor.
Okay.
So in principle, the procedure is that you can write down the 3J symbol for those rep. So those are easy. Those start to get a bit hard, but in principle, you can follow that procedure I told you to work out the 3J symbol. This is the full bootstrap equation for ON. So we have identity plus a term involving the external operators and summation over all possible rep and the operator in the rep and the crossing vector. So in the afternoon, I'm going to show you there's a code that during my project with Yincheng, Juncheng, we wrote a code to do this computation.
So could we have worked with a subset of correlators with only phi and s?
Oh, if you only have phi and s, then you just need this one and this one.
Yeah. So is that a closed system to Bootstrap?
Yes, that is a closed system. So right now I'm considering the larger system, but you can also do the smaller system. Actually, for vector and singulator, this system is already enough to, if you bootstrap this system, you can find an island.
Mm-hmm.
Just that island is quite big and does not converge fast. So our purpose is trying to bootstrap those correlators. The theory space, the parameters that we want to scan is the scaling dimension of external operator and some OPE ratios or involving all the OPE among the external operator. For O2, we have to scan six-dimensional space. For O3, O4, we have to scan seven-dimensional space. Of course, now you scan won't work. Therefore, the plan is that we were going to scan delta phi, delta s, delta t using Delaunay search. But we scan the OP coefficient using cutting surface algorithm.
Why do you have other two operators for O3 and O4, which are the same?
Because for O2, certain rep does not appear in TT decomposition. So TT decomposition generically have such rep, but for O2, certain rep doesn't appear.
Okay, but why? I mean, like the other, they are the same. No, sorry, the other slide. Yeah, you have tried twice SDT, SSDT, SSDT.
So this is for generic case, but for O2, it's just those.
I think one of the SSDTs should be STTT.
Yeah, that was my like.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah, that was my question.
Sorry.
They were the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we just I just showed you the exist TTT structure, so sure,
yeah,
TTT should be there.
The last one,
in the second 5 IDS,
it's the same, you have written it twice.
It's the fifth structure from
this one.
Yeah, this is the,
yeah.
Oh, it's different. No, it's the fifth, yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay, so sorry. Yeah, this shouldn't be there.
So can I ask another question? For the feasibility algorithm, do we need to scan even on the OP coefficients or not?
I'm going to talk about that now.
Okay, thanks.
So
why do you scan only the ratio between the OP coefficients?
Okay, good question. Let me try to answer both questions now. So why we want to do OP scan? So first, what do we mean by OP scan? So, if we don't do OP scan, that means we start with this equation and we try to find the functional alpha acting on the identity equals to 1, acting on V theta as a 5 by 5 matrix is a positive semi-definite and acting on everything else is positive semi-definite. And the allowed region is all the points in delta phi delta t delta s such that we couldn't find this alpha. But with the OP scan, that means we make some choice for this OP coefficient and we contract the 5 by 5 matrix become 1 by 1 matrix and we demand that is positive.
and we demand everything else is a positive semi-definite. Then the allowed region is a point, is a region in seven-dimensional space, such that we couldn't find the alpha for this condition. So now the allowed region in those deltas are delta phi, delta t, delta s, such that for some lambda, this is allowed. Okay, so why we want to do OP scan? First reason is that OP scan is really try to demand those operators as the only relevant operators. It's actually a stronger condition. So let's think about it in this way. So imagine we don't do OP scan. There are some point in delta phi, delta s, delta t, such that at that point, we can actually find a solution with two phi, phi 1, phi 2, such that delta phi 1 equals delta phi 2. And but then they have different OP. So I know there is a solution like this. You can have two phi. They have different. They have exactly same scaling dimension, but different OPE. So they are actually two different operators. But there are some point which have this type of solution, but don't have the solution such that phi one delta phi equals to delta phi two, and also all the OPE coefficients are the same. So this basically means phi one equals to phi two. So there are cases you can have this type of solution, but you don't have this type of solution. So if we want to demand they are really the only relevant operators, then it has to be this case. So without an OP scan, we couldn't rule out this point, because this is just a compatible solution for this test. But it's not compatible solution for the test for with OP scan. So is this clear to you?
Can we play the same game with Isinga?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Actually, in the afternoon, I'm going to show you how to do this for Isinga.
So why does the cutting search algorithm work for OP coefficients but not for?
Oh, that will come in a few slides.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So assumption is in three different graphs, there's only one relevant operator. Only.
The assumption is in three different graphs, in each graph, there is only one relevant operator. So the point is, if you don't do OP scan, you are demanding there is only one energy level or scaling dimension level. But on that level, you could have different operator.
Why is the case how do you know beforehand that for O2 and for those OM model, you have only one relevant?
Oh, that's our assumption to do bootstrap. Of course, I guess your question would be, why we use those assumptions to do this bootstrap? I don't have a good explanation, but actually, that's an interesting question. Why we use this assumption to do the bootstrap? I have a hand waving way, which is that from the equation of motion, you can tell there must be a big gap between phi and the next operator after phi. Therefore, demanding next operator is larger than three, essentially encoded the information in the equation of motion. In fact, all the island we can get in bootstrap, using, super easing, ON, all the cases can be roughly explained in this way. That essentially tells us we need at least have a system of phi and s, because with phi and s we have access in phi channel, therefore we can demand a gap between phi and phi prime. Then the question is why we want to include t. The reason is t have small scaling dimension, around 1.2. So we expect that for operator have smaller scaling dimension should be important in the bootstrap constraint. And then, essentially, those are the assumptions. But for generic CFT, which assumption could give us an island, that's unknown. And one have to experiment. So my point here is that you have to do OP scan because it's a stronger condition. But that is another reason why we need to do OP scan. So I'm going to talk about that later of this week.
So numerically, how much do you get better if you include the OP coefficients?
I will show you in the afternoon tutorial. Okay, so in the next few minutes, I will quickly go through the cutting surface algorithm. By the way, why we scan ratios? Because once you scan ratio, this n by n matrix already become a 1 by 1 matrix, so that's already enough. Let's go back to the cutting surface algorithm. I will take a easy model as an example, and we want to scan delta sigma, delta epsilon, and the ratio lambda sigma sigma epsilon over lambda epsilon epsilon epsilon. So we want to find a linear function such that it acting on the identity is 1. Z2 even channel so those are just the condition from yesterday. The only difference is that now for the with theta term, now we plug in OP. So we plug in this term, we plug in that x. Assuming we take some delta sigma, delta epsilon, and x. And at that point, assuming we find a functional alpha. So now, let's let this alpha acting on the left-hand side of this constraint. So what do you get? Alpha acting on this term, and we let x to be an arbitrary variable. Then this constraint becomes this form. It's a 2 by 2 matrix with x here and 1 here. So you immediately realize once you find an alpha at this specific point, this alpha excludes this point for sure. But it actually excludes more than this point, because from this constraint, you can actually solve for the range of x such that this alpha can exclude. What I mean is, you make a computation at a specific point, you get this alpha. Now, after you get this alpha, you let alpha acting on this term and pretend now x is a variable. That's just give you an expression like this, and the matrix are some number. Therefore, from here, it's a quadratic constraint. From here, you can solve which range in x that can be excluded by this alpha. Is this clear to you? OK, good. So the main point is that you find an alpha, but that alpha does not only exclude the pointer you choose. It actually exclude a range in X. So those are the constraints.
M11, does it have a sign constraint? The M11 coefficient?
So
it can be positive or negative.
Those are just some number. In principle,
one would be alpha acting on V even plus
yes
alpha acting on V odd.
No, I'm just saying if this is some quadratic equation being positive.
Yes.
So the range of X when it's positive depends on the sign of M11. If M11 is negative, you only get a finite interval in X.
But
if M11 is positive, you get like two half intervals.
You can have different, both cases exist. So that of course depends on the number for the alpha. So for different computation, you could have both cases.
Maybe you need no code, you actually calculate this X or in the cutting surface algorithm?
What is cutting surface algorithm? So cutting surface algorithm essentially just test the points and try to keep track of which region are excluded, which region are not excluded, and in this way you scan, find the number of points and you can exclude a bigger volume. So assume we now scan many OP coefficient, and we first fix all the deltas, and first step we have to choose the bounding box, and after we find a functional alpha at a specific point, we got a quadratic constraint. That quadratic constraint are this term. And we solve this quadratic constraint, and we find which range in lambda that we can exclude.
So,
yes.
Alpha does not depend on X, right?
Now, in the quadratic constraint, alpha does depend on... alpha is the functional we got by in a bootstrap in a feasibility test at a specific point.
Yeah.
So that's just some functional given to you by SDPB, but that depends on the point you want to test. Once you get this functional, then in the quadratic constraint, it doesn't depend on X. Now, let me show you an example with three OP coefficients, therefore two OP ratios. In first step, I test the blue point. After I get a function at the blue point, I plug in back to the quadratic constraint, and I immediately realize this whole range are excluded. Then I only have this part, which is unknown. Then what should I do next? I should choose a point in the unknown region and test that point. But I don't want to choose a point in the corner, because if I choose a point here, in the next step, I don't know which direction it will cut, but it might cut this corner. So what I mean is, if I have this unknown region, if I choose next point to here, it might, so I don't know what alpha SDPB were going to give me. It might give me an alpha cut this part, that's good. But it might give me an alpha that cut this part, that's bad. Then which point I should choose? I should choose a point roughly in the center of this region. In that way, no matter which direction going to cut, that's always roughly cuts half of it. So that's why next point I want to choose this red point. So you see in the next step, it roughly cuts half. Then next pointer, I also want to choose a pointer in the center. Then that cut half. So keep going after a finite number of steps. In step 8, I actually find a feasible point. So then this computation terminate. So in this example, you can see roughly in each step, you cut the unknown region by half. Therefore, the number of steps you need roughly proportional to log of the volume, roughly proportional to dimension of the space. Therefore, they scale linearly with number of parameters instead of exponentially.
So how do you justify the bounding points, the minimum and maximum?
That's a good question. So in practice, I will talk about this later.
Can you ask me? The number of OP coefficient on which you're scanning, does it depend on the number of correlators that you have? Like that you have a maximum number of OP coefficient that you can scan on, right?
Yes.
Okay.
In principle, you can also scan the subset of that and leave the rest as an N by N matrix. So let's say you have 5 OP coefficient. In principle, you can just scan part of it.
Yeah, but if you scan another OP coefficient, I mean, there is no effect, right? If you don't, if they don't appear in the correlators.
You mean for the term that does not appear in the does not appear in VZ. In principle, you can also do OP scan for those operators.
Is it gonna matter? I mean, is it gonna do anything?
It's in a stronger condition. So, for example, let's say in Ising model, for this term it's around 3.8. So in Z to even channel, that's a 2x2 matrix. So then, in principle, you can demand alpha dot v even and plug in the OPE. You can demand this to be positive. To do that, you have to plug in delta equals to 3.8. Then maybe you demand alpha acting on v even is positive for delta larger than some number after that, maybe 5. So if you demand this condition, you essentially try to demand at 3.8, there is only one relevant, there is only one operator at delta equals to 3.8. That's a stronger condition. Your previous condition just demand there are operators at 3.8, but could be 2, could be 3. But with OP scan, you demand that can be only one operator at that specific delta. So this is a stronger condition. But
it's the OP of epsilon prime.
This?
Yes.
So this 2OP is lambda sigma sigma epsilon prime and lambda epsilon 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 prime.
Okay, thanks.
So this is a stronger condition, but does this lead to a smaller island? My impression is not, but I never seriously tested.
Do we need a gap between the 3.8 and the 5 in order for this to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because if it's not 5, let's say if we put 3.9 here, then in numeric this 3.9 can roughly approximate what happened at 3.8. Okay, the cutting surface algorithm works. Let me summarize the procedure. So we first run the SDP for some point. So here my x is I is which step? So let's say if I equals to 1, that's my first step. I pick up some OP coefficient and I run the SDP. If I can't find alpha, I declare my choice of delta allowed. But if I do find such alpha, I compute the unknown region, which is which is the region that are not excluded by this alpha. So that's all the x such that this quadratic constraint is smaller than zero. Okay, then I have to take the intersection of all the unknown region from all the alpha I had in hand. Then I ask the intersection of all the unknown region from different alpha, the intersection is zero or not. If it is an empty set, then I declare my choice of delta are disallowed. But if it's not empty set, then I can find a point in the unknown region. Then next step is that I have to move this point to roughly to the center of the intersection. Then I repeat this process. Okay. Yes. Okay, that's a very good question. So so in practice, what we do is that we set up a bounding box. That bounding box basically choose a small range for OP coefficient. That basically fits the sign. But maybe your question is that then how do we choose bounding box? In practice, what we do is that we do a computation at a smaller lambda, and at smaller lambda, we find a bunch of feasible points, and we look at those feasible points, try to say roughly what's the range of the OP coefficient. Then we set up a bounding box based on that and do this computation at higher lambda. And at high lambda, we make the bounding box to be smaller.
Can you use physical argument to do that, like free serial P?
Yes, you can also take a free theory. Also for Wilson Fisher, you can also take a free theory as a starting point. And that is the reason why we need this bounding box. So in previous step, I just said we want to check the intersection of the constraints. But unfortunately, this is an NP-hard problem. So in principle, we couldn't do it. The NP-hardness have something to do with the fact this type of constraint can give you many disconnected feasible region. That's the origin of the NP-hardness. But if you set up a small bounding box such that in this small bounding box you only have one allowed region, then we have some good heuristics that in practice we can solve this problem. So give you one example. In this computation, maybe you notice that every time after I test the blue point, the unknown region are very close to the blue point. So the blue point is just outside the unknown region. Therefore, in practice, what we can do is that we write down those quadratic constraints. Usually, most of them are satisfied except the last one. This could be slightly positive. Then we try to minimize that quadratic constraint and try to keep everything else negative. And basically, essentially, that's like we start here and try to move around to see if we can find a feasible a point that is in the intersection of this U. So of course, if you have too many disconnected regions, this will definitely not work. But in practice, if we have an island in the OP space, that's roughly what happened in conformal bootstrap. So in practice, it could work. Also, we want to move the point to the center of the unknown region, starting from a point which so from first step we can get a point which might be here. So I start from this point, try to move around, test a region around it. I may find the point that is the unknown region. Now I want to move this point to the center. What can I do? I can just draw a line, pass through this point in random direction, then move this point to the center of this line, then draw another line, pass through this point, and move this point to the center of this line. After you do this line search a few times, it goes to the center. Of course, in practice, the allowed region might not be as nice as this shape. It could be something like this, very thin in certain direction. In that case, you need the Hessian to rescale this region to properly such that different directions have roughly same scale, then perform this line search. So in practice, the algorithm is quite complicated. Okay, so the whole algorithm we need for the tutorial afternoon is we separate the theory space to be delta and lambda. And for delta, for fixed delta, we call cutting surface algorithm, and that automatically pick lambda for you and determine those delta are allowed or disallowed. Then in the space of delta, we call Delaunay search to scan over delta. Okay, I think that's the end of this lecture. Any questions?
So you have mentioned that the allowed region can be disconnected.
Yes.
So how do you justify that this island you find is the physical theory doesn't lie on the other islands?
That's a good question. So in this procedure, we didn't check the whole range of OP space. We only check the OP space in certain bounding boards. And those bounding boards are bounding boards that we found from lower lambda computation. So it's possible that outside these bounding boards, you have another allowed region in OP space. But this procedure essentially try to scan around the island, scan the region around the island. Outside the island, it could be something else. This happened even in the delta space. In the delta space, we have this island, but then we have a continental feasible region right to the island. That's yesterday's exercise 4, so you should scan that yourself. So in OP space, in practice, that could happen. In principle, that could happen. But in practice, my impression is that, for example, I did this experiment for smaller lambda, let's say in three dimension. If I have three OPE, I can really try to check explicitly which range it excludes. In that case, it looks to me it excludes the whole thing. in OP space. But in principle, you could have another feasible region. Oh, and another question I haven't answered. I think before that is the question, why we do this for OPE, not for delta? So the main idea of OP scan is that you test one point that does not only exclude that point, but actually exclude a lot of things. But then why we don't do that for delta? The main reason is for OP space, that's quadratic constraint. That's something we can easily keep track of. However, in principle, of course, you can also try to do this for delta. You do one test and keep alpha to be the same and test different point in delta space. At some point I did this test, it looks like this. If you try to exclude, if you find alpha at this specific point, let's say, imagine this is a 3D Ethan Island. You find an alpha here, and you use this alpha to test the point around it. Basically, it excludes a small triangle around that point. So first, this is something you couldn't easily check. You have to compute a block at a different point. And even if you try to check it, it's not that effective. That's why we do this for OP, not for delta. Okay, any questions?
Any question? Like in this, you're fixing always the conformal dimensions. And how sensitive is it to the change of conformal dimension? Because maybe you're in an island, and if you scan through the island, then you do the cutting surface algorithm, you're going to get a different surface in the OPE data. I guess, how different those would be?
Okay, so basically, at each delta, you need a few alpha to exclude the OP space. In practice, we might sample 20 points. We get 20 alpha to exclude the space, but maybe you might only need three. Let's say you need three alpha at each point to exclude the OP space. Then you move to another delta. Your question is how these three alpha relate to that three alpha. This is actually a very good question. They are actually, if the points are close to each other, they are actually doesn't change much. Therefore, when you do a new computation at a different delta, you can hot start from previous computation. Internally in simple boot, for new point, the testing point is choosing from previous testing point.
But in principle, if the island is big enough, the surface could be completely different. Well, if you're scanning through the continent, like the surface that I find in your big coefficients, it can be like
You couldn't use this to scan the. Okay, for the continent, yes. So the alpha on the island and the alpha on the continent could be very different. Okay, if there's no more questions, we can have a coffee break.